Imagine deciding to build a brand new house, right? And halfway through construction, the contractor pulls you aside and casually mentions that the project is now going to cost 75% more than the original quote.
Oh, and it's going to take an extra year to finish, right?
Exactly. I mean, in real estate, that is a massive lawsuit waiting to happen. But in custom software development, that is just, well, it's literally the industry average.
It really is.
So, welcome to the deep dive. Today, we are opening up the wild, unpredictable, and frankly, entirely opaque black box of software development costs. We're drawing on a single, highly detailed source today. It's the Comprehensive Guide to Software Development Costs from the Scopic Software blog.
Did a great breakdown.
Yeah, and our mission here is to figure out why, an app can cost $5,000 to build in one scenario and then $1 million in another.
Right, because when you look at those numbers from the outside, the software industry looks completely arbitrary. Like they're just making it up. But once you unpack the mechanics of how digital products are actually engineered, you realize that a price tag is never just plucked from thin air. It represents the sum total of dozens of highly specific, interconnected decisions made throughout a project's entire life cycle.
Right. So whether you are an entrepreneur, sketching out your very first minimum viable product, or maybe a manager staring down a terrifying IT budget.
Which is always fun.
Oh, always. Or even if you're just someone curious about the invisible financial architecture of the apps on your phone right now, we are going to equip you with the tools to avoid a total budget disaster.
Which is so needed.
Definitely. Okay, let's unpack this. Let's start with the single biggest lever that drives a price up or down, and that's the raw complexity of the software itself. The Scopic guide breaks this down into tiers, and I gotta say, the financial spread is
Oh, it
vast.
really is.
Like a basic app, say a simple fitness tracker or a basic recipe database that runs anywhere from $10,000 to $50,000.
Right, and those are what we call low complexity builds. You are generally looking at maybe 2 to 4 months of work there.
Okay, so what are they actually doing in that time?
Well, the developer is creating a pretty straightforward user interface, setting up basic data storage, maybe a simple user login. There is minimal back-end logic happening behind the scenes.
But the moment you need a custom web application, like, say, a SaaS platform or a mid-size e-commerce store, you immediately jump to $30,000 to well over $150,000.
Easily.
And if you want to integrate artificial intelligence or, machine learning for predictive analytics or image recognition, the floor jumps to $75,000 and the ceiling stretches past $400,000.
What's fascinating here is that the jump in price isn't just arbitrary. It's entirely about the underlying mechanics.
Like the data processing.
Exactly. Adding artificial intelligence isn't just about, dropping a smart feature into an app. You are paying developers to clean and process massive data sets,
Right.
train complex models, and rent immense cloud computing power just to get the AI to function reliably.
Wow.
Yeah, it requires highly specialized engineering talent.
And if you push even further into enterprise solutions like internal platforms integrating legacy databases across a huge multinational company, those scale from $150,000 to over $1 million.
And I imagine those take forever.
Oh, they often take years to complete.
Crazy. Okay, let's pause on the platforms themselves because this is where I see a lot of people get tripped up. The source points out that building an app natively for both iOS and Android basically doubles the workload.
Right, it does.
Now, I know there are cross-platform frameworks out there like React Native and Flutter, where you ostensibly write the code once and deploy it everywhere, right?
Yep, write once, run anywhere. So why wouldn't every single company just use those and literally cut their bill in half?
Is launching on iOS and Android simultaneously like building one house with two front doors? Or is it literally paying to build two separate houses?
It's the latter. And this is the ultimate trade-off between budget and performance.
Okay.
Cross-platform tools are incredible for saving money, but they operate by essentially wrapping your single code base in a translation layer so it can run on different
So
devices.
translating in real time.
Sort of, yeah. And because of that, you lose a degree of native performance. It might not feel quite as hyper smooth as an app built specifically for an iPhone using Apple's proprietary language.
Right.
Furthermore, cross-platform apps can really struggle to seamlessly access native hardware features, like a phone's Bluetooth drivers, advanced camera APIs, or complex GPS tracking.
So if you are building an app that relies heavily on those hardware features, you're forced to build natively.
You have to, yeah. Which means you are literally paying to build two separate houses from the ground up. one for Apple users, one for Android users, two coding languages, two separate testing environments,
and two entirely separate teams maintaining them.
Okay, but my instinct here, especially for a new business, is to just bite the bullet and build the whole dream from day one. I want my app everywhere. iOS, Android, web platform, all the features. I mean, I want a massive launch. Why shouldn't I just go for it?
Because taking that approach is usually the fastest way to bankrupt a project before it even launches.
Really?
Absolutely. The smartest cost control move a team can make is being utterly ruthless about their version 1.0 scope.
Being ruthless, I like that.
They have to be. When you try to build the ultimate feature-complete dream right out of the gate, the project basically collapses under its own architectural weight.
How so?
Well, the third-party integrations start conflicting, the localization into multiple languages bogs down the interface, and the compliance requirements stack up exponentially.
Oh, compliance is a great example here. The source lists regulations like HIPAA for healthcare, GDPR for European data privacy, and PCI DSS for payment security.
Right.
And these just sound like legal checkboxes, but they clearly carry heavy development costs, don't they?
Oh, they are far more than legal checkboxes.
Yeah.
From an engineering standpoint, HIPAA compliance requires actual physical and digital isolation.
Wow, physical isolation.
Yeah. It dictates how every single packet of data is encrypted in transit and at rest. You have to build entirely separate, highly secure server environments to handle patient data apart from the rest of the app's traffic.
That sounds incredibly expensive.
It is. And then you have to pay for SOC2 security audits and penetration testing, where you essentially hire ethical hackers to try and break into your system to prove it's secure.
That's wild.
Right. So you simply cannot afford to do all of that for 50 different features at launch. You have to break the vision down into phases.
Okay, but let's say a founder actually listens to that advice. They ruthlessly pare down version 1.0. They choose one platform. Their budget still isn't safe, is it?
Not at all.
Because the actual coding is only half the battle. This brings us back to that terrifying McKinsey statistic I mentioned at the top of the show. IT projects overrunning budgets by 75%.
Yeah, and timelines by 50%.
Right. So here's where it gets really interesting. Where is all that extra money vanishing to?
It goes to the hidden iceberg of software development. When people hear a price quote for an app, they just assume 90% of that money is paying someone to type code.
Which makes sense, logically.
Sure, but in reality, core feature engineering only makes up 40 to 55% of the typical budget.
Less than half.
Less than half.
So what is eating the other half? The Scopic guide points directly at quality assurance, or QA. Testing apparently consumes 15 to 20% of the total budget.
Yep.
And 20 to 40% of the overall timeline. That is a massive chunk.
But testing is arguably the most critical financial safety net in software development.
How so?
Think about the mechanics of fixing a mistake. If a developer catches a bug early in the initial coding phase, it is relatively cheap to fix. It is like correcting a typo on a set of blueprints.
Right. Easy enough.
But if you rush through QA and that bug makes it into the live, publicly launched application, fixing it requires dismantling live architecture.
Oh, man.
You have to pull the app down, rewrite the affected code, ensure the fix didn't break three other unrelated features, and then push a patch to thousands of users.
And if that bug exposed sensitive user data, the cost skyrockets.
Exactly.
So if you are listening to this right now and you happen to be looking at a software development proposal from an agency, check the line items carefully. If the development costs make up 90% of the quote and the QA allocation is zero or suspiciously small, that isn't a discount.
No, it's not.
That is a massive financial trap.
Under-resourcing QA guarantees you will pay triple for those fixes later.
Ugh.
But, you know, the hidden iceberg extends well beyond testing. We also have to factor in cloud infrastructure.
The servers that actually keep the app online?
Exactly.
The guide points out this is a highly variable cost. Like, a small basic app might cost $50 a month to host. But a high-traffic platform dealing with video or real-time data syncs can scale from $5,000 to $50,000 a month just in cloud computing fees.
Because cloud providers charge for processing power and database queries. Every single time a user opens your app, searches for an item, or loads an image, the app pings a server.
So if you go viral,
your cloud computing costs will spike in real time. You have to design the app's architecture to be incredibly efficient with those data queries to keep hosting costs down.
Wow. Okay, let's talk about the stat in the source material that legitimately caught me off guard.
Which one?
Post-launch maintenance. Industry benchmarks peg annual maintenance at 15 to 20% of the initial build cost.
Yep, every year.
To run the math on that, if you spend $100,000 building a custom app, you need to budget 20 grand every single year just to keep it alive.
Just to keep it functioning.
That's a heavy yearly subscription fee. I mean, it's like buying a high-end sports car. The sticker price at the dealership is just the entry fee. The second you drive it off the lot, you are on the hook for premium fuel, wildly expensive insurance, and highly specialized tune-ups just to keep the engine from seizing on the highway.
The sports car analogy works perfectly, but I would actually add one layer to it.
Okay, what's that?
In software, you aren't just maintaining the engine. You are constantly adapting to changing road conditions.
Oh, interesting.
Right, because software is not a static object. It is a living, breathing ecosystem that constantly degrades if it's ignored. Apple and Google release new operating system updates every year.
Right.
If your code isn't updated to match Apple's new privacy policies or new screen dimensions, your app will literally break on newer phones. So you are paying for ongoing security patches, server optimizations, and third-party API updates.
That makes total sense.
And crucially, a portion of that maintenance budget must go toward user feedback. Your early adopters are going to interact with the app in ways you never anticipated.
Always.
They will uncover clunky workflows and request missing features. If you drain your entire budget launching the app and save nothing for post-launch iteration, your product will stagnate and die.
Which is why the universal rule in this space is to always bake in a 20 to 30% contingency buffer beyond the initial quote to account for all these post-launch realities.
Absolutely essential.
Okay, so we have covered what is being built and the hidden costs of maintaining it. We have to pivot to the human element now.
The talent.
Exactly. Who is actually typing the code?
Yeah.
Because the hourly rate of the developer basically dictates the entire financial model.
It does. And this raises an important question about global talent distribution, which is the primary way companies try to control their budgets. The guide notes that 76% of business managers outsource at least some of their development.
Wow, 76%. And the 2026 geographic rate breakdown provided in the source is fascinating.
It's very telling.
In the U.S. and Canada, you are looking at $120 to over $200 an hour. Western Europe is $80 to $150. Eastern Europe drops to $40 to $80 an hour. Latin America sits at $35 to $75. And India or South Asia bottoms out at $20 to $50 an hour.
Right. And those numbers represent massive macroeconomic disparities. You are seeing the differences in localized cost of living, currency strength, and the maturation of regional tech hubs.
Sure, but looking at those numbers, I have to push back a bit and ask the obvious question.
Not for it.
If I can hire a developer in South Asia for $20 an hour, why on earth would anyone ever sign a contract paying a U.S. team $200 an hour? What is the hidden catch? Because the math heavily incentivizes taking the lowest possible hourly rate.
It does on paper, but chasing the absolute lowest hourly rate introduces you to the concept of friction costs.
Friction costs.
Right. Extreme geographic distance usually brings extreme time zone differences. If your core business team is in New York and your development team is 12 and a half hours ahead in India, synchronous communication becomes nearly impossible.
I see.
If a developer hits a roadblock and needs clarification on a feature, they message you. But you are asleep.
Right.
They wake up, answer the question, but now they are asleep. A simple five-minute conversation takes 48 hours to resolve.
Oh, wow. So the timeline just stretches out endlessly.
Exactly. The $20 an hour looks great on paper, but you end up paying for significantly more hours because the project loses all its momentum to administrative lag.
That makes a ton of sense.
Furthermore, when you cross massive cultural and language barriers, you have to invest heavily in rigid project management. Every single requirement must be documented in exhaustive detail because you cannot rely on casual, nuanced conversations to align the team.
So that extra management overhead just eats directly into the perceived hourly saving.
Exactly. Cheap isn't always cheap.
And then there's the skill disparities, specifically regarding junior versus senior developers. The Scopic Guide emphasizes that a senior developer charging $80 an hour is actually vastly cheaper in the long run than a junior developer charging $30 an hour.
Always. And it comes down to technical debt.
Technical debt.
Yeah. A junior developer might code a feature quickly, but they often achieve that speed by using messy, unscalable code architecture. It works today, but it is deeply fragile.
Okay, so what happens when it breaks?
Well, when you want to add a new feature 6 months later, The developers have to spend weeks untangling the old code just to make the new code fit.
Yeah.
It's like hiring a cheap plumber who seals pipes with duct tape.
Oh, no.
Right. It holds water for a week, but when it bursts inside the wall, you're paying triple to tear out the drywall and fix the underlying infrastructure. A senior developer writes clean, modular, scalable code the first time around.
Which explains why regions like Eastern Europe and Latin America are increasingly viewed as the sweet spots of the global talent matrix. They offer a strong balance. You get highly competitive rates around $40 to $80 an hour, but you also get deep talent pools, high English proficiency, and crucially for Latin America, significant time zone overlap with U.S. markets, which basically eliminates those friction costs.
You optimize for long-term value, not just short-term spreadsheet savings.
Right. So with all these traps and pitfalls laid out, let's switch gears and actually empower you, the listener.
All right, let's do it.
Let's look at the tactical roadmap for optimizing a budget without compromising the software's quality. We will call this the optimizer's toolkit. So what does this all mean? How do modern teams actually shrink the workload?
Well, we can start with the technology stack itself. Automation is replacing a massive amount of manual human labor. The guide highlights CI/CD pipelines as a prime example, capable of reducing deployment costs by up to 78%.
Wait, 78%? That is an incredibly specific and massive number. How does a CI/CD pipeline actually save that much money?
So CI/CD stands for Continuous Integration and Continuous Deployment. To understand the savings, look at how code traditionally moved from a developer's laptop to a live user.
Oh.
A human tester would click through the new feature, and then another engineer would manually migrate files between servers. It took hours of expensive labor for every single update, and human error often broke things.
Right. Humans make mistakes.
Exactly. A CI/CD pipeline replaces all of that with an automated script. The moment a developer finishes a line of code, the system automatically runs thousands of automated tests. If the code passes, it is automatically deployed to the live app in minutes.
That's incredible.
You are compressing hours of manual labor into seconds every single day.
The source also points heavily toward utilizing low-code tools to accelerate prototyping by 10 times and relying on mature open-source libraries instead of custom-building everything.
Which is huge.
Right. Like if an app needs a user login portal or a credit card processing feature, you just plug in an existing, highly secure open-source component.
You don't reinvent the wheel.
It makes total sense. It is like building a house and choosing to use standard prefabricated drywall and plumbing for the boring functional parts, right? You save your actual budget and custom craftsmanship for the stunning architectural masterpiece in the living room.
I love that.
You only pay for custom code on the features that actually differentiate your app from the competition.
If we connect this to the bigger picture, that analogy perfectly illustrates the strategy. But to ensure you know exactly which parts of the app are the standard drywall and which parts require custom architecture, you have to invest in a rigorous discovery phase before any coding even begins.
The discovery phase?
Yes. This is where you pour the concrete foundation. You define the user personas, build wireframes, map the database architecture, and lock in the feature list. If you decide to change the dimensions of the living room after the concrete is poured, your budget collapses.
And that structural planning leads directly into how a client should negotiate the actual contract.
It does.
The source details three main pricing models: fixed price, time and materials, and dedicated team. Fixed price sounds like the safest bet on paper, right? You agree on a total cost before the work starts. You know exactly what you will pay.
Fixed price is a fantastic model for predictability, but it carries a severe catch. It is entirely rigid.
Okay, in what way?
It only works for very simple, tightly scoped MVPs. If you learn something new from user testing halfway through development and decide you want to change the app scope, the agency will hit you with incredibly extensive change orders. A fixed price contract aggressively punishes you for changing your mind.
Wow. So the alternative is time and materials, where you just pay an hourly rate for the time the developers actually work.
Right.
That gives you ultimate flexibility to pivot and change features, but I have to imagine the risk there is that a mismanaged project could just drift aimlessly, you know, billing hours into infinity.
The financial ceiling disappears entirely if you lack strong project management. And the dedicated team model is similar. You simply rent an outsourced team on a monthly retainer. It acts as your own internal IT department.
Which sounds expensive.
It is ideal for long-term, multi-year scaling, but totally impractical for a startup just trying to launch a first version.
So what is the optimal path through those contracts? Is there a way to blend predictability with flexibility?
Yeah, the most strategic agencies now use a hybrid approach. You sign a strict fixed-price contract specifically for the discovery and design phases.
Ah, okay.
You force both the client and the agency to meticulously define the blueprints, align on the user experience, and establish a budget ceiling. Once those blueprints are mathematically locked, you switch to a time and materials contract for the actual coding.
Which gives the developers the flexibility to adapt the code as unexpected technical challenges arise without breaking the underlying blueprint.
Exactly.
It is all about enforcing discipline early on so you have the freedom to be agile later. Well, if there is a core philosophy to take away from this entire deep dive, it really comes back to the discipline of the minimum viable product. Scope is your biggest financial lever. Be ruthless about cutting features for version 1.0. Do not let the hidden iceberg sink your budget. Always verify the QA line items in a proposal and plan for a 20% annual maintenance fee.
And combat that McKinsey 75% overrun statistic by baking in a healthy contingency buffer.
Right. And finally, when you are looking at the global talent map, remember that chasing the lowest hourly rate usually just buys you an incredibly expensive pile of technical debt down the road.
The most valuable takeaway from understanding these mechanics is how it shifts your perspective on the digital world. The next time you open an app on your phone, look past the sleek interface. Try to see the invisible architecture beneath it.
Yeah, that's a great point.
Notice an integration and ask yourself if it was custom built or an open source library. Recognize that every seamless button click required hundreds of hours of QA, cloud configuration, and maintenance budgeting. You will really begin to see technology not just as tools, but as immense interconnected financial ecosystems.
You really start to appreciate the massive invisible economy running silently in your pocket, which leaves you with one final, slightly provocative thought to consider on your own.
Oh.
We have talked endlessly about testing assumptions, restricting scope, and relying on a strong discovery phase to protect your budget. Considering all of that, what if the most financially successful, budget-saving piece of software you ever design is the one you decide not to build at all simply because a meticulous discovery phase proved the market didn't actually want it?
That is a great thought to end on.
Thank you for exploring the true cost of software development with us. We will catch you on the next deep dive.